So tonight, we've been talking about joy for a few weeks now, and cultivating joy. And tonight I want to continue that discussion. And last time we had started to talk about the way we can cultivate different qualities in ourselves that actually give rise to joy and give rise to happiness and well-being. And one of the central qualities we can actually cultivate in regards to that is gratitude and appreciation. Just being grateful. Being grateful for what we have. And there's actually been tremendous research recently on gratitude and the function of gratitude in our lives. So for instance, a number of studies from the positive psychology movement have shown that people who are more grateful are happier, less depressed, and less stressed, and more satisfied with their lives. Happiness leads to just joy and ease in the world. Grateful people feel they have higher levels of control of their environment. They feel less out of control. They have more of a sense of purpose in life and more of a sense of self-acceptance. And grateful people have more positive ways of coping with the difficulties they experience in life. They're more likely to seek support from other people, and they're more likely to reinterpret and grow from a difficult experience rather than just feeling sunk from it. And also grateful people have less negative coping strategies. So if something difficult arises, they're less likely to try to avoid the problem and more likely to blame themselves, to use substances, to use alcohol, whatever, and more likely to in some way effectively deal with the problem, to not run away from it. It's quite an extraordinary list of qualities that's cultivated by gratitude. I mean, if you just think about those qualities, wouldn't we all love to have that? Happier, less depressed, less stressed, more satisfied, more feeling of control and purpose, more self-acceptance, better way of coping with our difficulties, a more positive outlook on life, less negative coping strategies, and less running away. It's pretty huge, right? Just from the simple quality of working with cultivating gratitude. There's one study done by a number of positive psychologists which gave people a number of different interventions and a placebo intervention to see what kind of self-cultivation and cultivating of which kinds of qualities would be most effective. And it's fascinating because of the various modalities they gave people to work with and the various practices they gave people to work with, the two most powerful were the two that focused on gratitude. The most powerful short-term effect was what they called a gratitude visit, where participants were asked to write and deliver a letter of gratitude to a person who had been especially kind to them and who they felt they hadn't properly thanked. That had the highest short-term benefit. By short-term, I mean month-long benefit. They felt that effect. They did it once in a week. They felt that effect for a whole month, which is pretty remarkable. And the other was to keep a kind of gratitude journal, where each day they wrote down three things that went well that day and the causes for it. So three things that went well that I felt good about and why. Why those things went well. Why that happened. And these people who did this practice showed a benefit 6 months later. In fact, the benefit kept growing. Versus, not just versus normal people, but versus the placebo group, right? And versus the other practices. And even though participants were only asked to do it for a week, many people in the study, because they felt the benefits so strongly, kept on doing it for a long time afterwards. So just that simple sense of gratitude, of acknowledging what's good in our life and appreciating it. That simple. Just acknowledging what's good in our life and appreciating it. And indeed, that sense of appreciation is not only directed towards oneself. In fact, another study, very recent study from 2010, showed that increase in gratitude also increased one's altruistic tendencies. So there was more compassion, more tendency to give, more tendency to care for others when gratitude was more present. People in this study were more likely, if they had more gratitude, they were more likely to sacrifice individual gains for communal success. It's quite striking. Cicero, famous Roman philosopher, said gratitude is not only the greatest of the virtues, but the parent of all the others. And there's something quite true, at least certainly in these studies, that basic sense of just appreciation. It's like, oh, this is what I have in life. Can I be grateful for it and appreciate it? Which is absolutely extraordinary. There's a wonderful story about Rabbi Elimelech and Reb Zusia, who are brothers, and sort of the founders of Hasidism in Poland. And Zusia is a very famous, sort of beautiful character. And one of the things that Rabbi Elimelech did pretty well, and he sort of had a successful following, was a successful Rabbi, and Zusia was sort of a wandering, amazing teacher, etc., but was never doing very well, never had any money, you know, was like sleeping outside in the Beit Midrash, you know, had a tough life. And some of Rabbi Elimelech's students came to Rabbi Elimelech and said, you know, how do we deal with having a really difficult life, a really difficult way? And he said, you know, I have to be honest with you, my life, for the most part, has actually been pretty easy. You know, it's worked pretty well, I've gotten a lot of success. You should really go ask my brother, Reb Zusia. You know, he would know. So they go and they find Reb Zusia, who's like in the story, like, you know, lying by the oven in the Beit Knesset, because that's where, you know, he wants to hang out to be warm. And they ask him, they say, you know, what should we do when things are really difficult in life? He says, I don't know, that's a really good question. But I've actually never had any really hard days. Every day has been a gift from God. And it's an extraordinary sense. You see in sort of the Reb Zusia stories that there's this tremendous sense of just love and openness and playfulness and gratitude for life and for himself. Which is not a gratitude, it's important. There's a way that gratitude can just be Pollyannish. And it's not about avoiding noticing any difficulties or any problems. People who know me know that's not what the practice is about. But it is a profound sense of appreciation for just who we are and for the circumstances we have in life, right? Just for what we have in life. And all of us have beautiful, wonderful moments in our day-to-day life. And Reb Zusia is also famous for having said, when I go to the heavenly court, they're not going to ask me, why weren't you Moshe? Right? They're going to ask me, why weren't you Zusia? It's not about having some crazy, right, level that we're trying to reach to. It's just about fundamentally being ourselves and appreciating ourselves in that moment. And one thing I think which is so interesting about these studies, and so interesting really about, I think, the whole positive psychology movement, which is doing fantastic things, is that basically just what they're doing is spiritual practice. Right? They're doing spiritual practice in a slightly secularized form. And they're doing studies on it, which is fantastic. But of course, if we think about gratitude, it's probably one of our most fundamental practices in Judaism. One of our most fundamental, basic, everyday, moment-to-moment practices. Just think about brachot. Think about blessings. We're supposed to say 100 blessings daily, right? Every blessing is a moment of gratitude. It's a moment of appreciation. It's not always the case for us, because often we sort of mumble through them, or we don't say them at all, or however we relate to them. But what an extraordinary opportunity. Every time, every really experience you have is an opportunity for gratitude in our tradition. Food, drink, scents, sights, going to the bathroom, our body, our clothes, our faculties, our freedom, our identity, our energy. Those are all concrete blessings, we say. Right? And we could have listed dozens more. We say a blessing on every one of those things. An expression for a moment of just that profound gratitude. Of the gratitude for having ourselves, our bodies. My sight, my mouth, my ears, my ability to sit here and talk to you in this room, my ability to learn Torah, my ability to grow and change, my ability to get up in the morning. We start our day, of course, with gratitude. The first thing we say in the morning is Moda ani lefanecha, right? I'm thankful before you, just for this life, just for this profound, profound gift of life. But of course, we lose it all the time, right? We forget about that gratitude. We forget about how tremendously lucky and blessed we actually are, how tremendously lucky and blessed each one of us is. And it's really helpful if we can touch in with that again, if we can just touch in with that again. One of the practices, I've mentioned this before, that I've adopted is that every time I say modim in the Amidah, I list five things that I'm grateful for that day. So just a break, you know, the words. List five things that I'm grateful for. Which is really like keeping a gratitude journal. I just didn't know it had been scientifically studied, right? But even in those moments when I can genuinely connect, even one thing, if I can list one thing that I'm grateful for at that moment, I can feel my heart open. And sort of just try it now. Can you think of one thing that happened today? One thing. A moment. It can be a moment. It can be a moment of sensation. It can be a moment of memory. It can be a moment of interaction with somebody. Can you think of one thing today or one thing this week that you're genuinely grateful for? You just feel appreciation for. Just notice it. Just bring it to mind. And really feel that appreciation and gratitude. And if you can't think of one thing, that's really interesting to notice. Because I'm sure that something lovely happened to you today. A small thing, a very small thing, right? Whatever it was, something lovely happened. And can we just start to cultivate that ability to stop and notice that loveliness? Stop and notice that beauty in the world. Stop and notice our luckiness. And we can have that gratitude every time we practice. Every time we practice, we can think about the preciousness and the fortune we have been given these practices to do. The fortune we have to be able to grow in this way. I feel it at least. I sit down and I feel like, what incredible fortune I have to be able to do this practice. How much thinner and less my life would be in so many ways if I wasn't able to do this. When we say Birkot HaShachar and wake up every morning, can we just stop for a moment and genuinely experience the gratitude for Pokeach Yirim, for being able to see and appreciate the wonders of the world, for having clothes, for having that sense of freedom, for having an upright body, for all of those pieces, for just having the strength to wake up and get up in the morning. It's just a beautiful opportunity to open to our experience. And so too, that joy can be cultivated, I think, in so much of the life of our mitzvot, our practices, our chagim, our celebrations together. They're built actually to cultivate our joy. Our chagim, we're called, right? B'yom simchatchem, in the day of your rejoicing, right? Sukkot, of course, is famous for that, but we're told every holiday that we're supposed to be rejoicing, that these are days of joy. And it's a wonderful sense, the ability when we can to join with other people, to sing, to eat, to experience, to open, but sometimes it's just a drag. Right? Sometimes it's not that. Sometimes it's like a rush and it's a drag and we're desperately trying to get everything ready before candle lighting and it doesn't really feel connected and it doesn't really feel a way that's cultivating that sense of joy in us. And so it's really just an invitation, as we remind ourselves of these things, it's an invitation to think, how can I do these things in the way so they do what they're intended to do? So they cultivate joy in my life. Is there a way they're not doing that? And is there a way I can transform that in some way? Is there a way that this practice isn't working for me? The mitzvot, we're told, Pikudei Hashem Yesharim Mesamchei Lev. The commandments of God are straight. They bring joy to the heart. They're supposed to bring joy to our heart. But what happens when they feel like a burden instead? Or they feel like they're taking us away from joy, they're taking us away from connection, or they're doing something else. And I think most of us, I certainly have that experience. So it's an opportunity to just reflect and think about what's really going to open my heart now. What's going to bring joy to my heart? How do I bring joy to my heart in this moment? And how do I use this practice in the wisest way possible to let that joy manifest? And that joy, of course, happens in our relationships, in our human connection of one to the other. Nachman of Bratslav taught, so does Reish Chochma, that there's joy in seeing the face of a tzaddik, and seeing the face of a sage. That's one kind of relationship. And you may experience that. You meet somebody who's awake, you know, who's full of love. Just full of love. You meet somebody who's full of love, who's full of compassion, who's awake. And there's a joy in that encounter, because there's something about their awakeness and their joy that's just infectious, you know. One of my teachers, who himself is pretty joyous, I was telling you about one of their teachers, who they used to call the happy Sayadaw. And he was 90-something. And they said, every time you'd see him, he'd be like, ah, so good to see you. He was just like full of joy and full of laughter. And one time they asked him, they said, you know, how come you're so happy all the time? How come you're so happy all the time? And like very genuine, you know? They'd see him and even they were like just this joy bubbling up. And he said to them, he said, I'm over 90 years old. I could die at any moment. How could I not be happy? Ah! Like, what an amazing relationship of gratitude and appreciation. It's like, instead of, oh my God, I could die any moment, it's like, how could I not appreciate this? I could die any moment, you know? It could be gone any moment. What else am I going to do with this time I have left here on earth, right? It's like, there ain't a lot of time left. I might as well spend it in joy. I mean, just such a beautiful teaching. You know, that's the experience of gratitude and appreciation, just opening to that moment of, oh right, I'm here, I'm still alive, can I open to the laughter and joy of the moment? And so can we be playful with each other? You know, how playful are we in our relationships with each other? Especially as we get older, we're adults now, you know. We're not supposed to do the things we used to do. Sometimes, you know, it's not as socially acceptable. And we really miss out. We miss out on the playfulness. We miss out on sort of the silliness, the laughter. It's really important. Silliness is really important, you know. It's actually a deep spiritual quality, right? Our ability to just laugh and open. There's famous stories of that the best used to go around with two badchanim, two jesters. And when people were like blocked, you know, and they couldn't reach Dveikut, the jesters would come out and just like make a lot of jokes and do ridiculous things, and then people would reach Dveikut. You know, then they totally reach this openness and connection. And it's true, it's a sense of, we all know it. I mean, one of the beautiful things about silliness is precisely the way it opens us up. But it's just like, well, if I'm going to be ridiculous, then all those boundaries start to fall away, and we start to just open up to the genuineness of our experience. And another really important part, I think, of manifesting joy in our relationships is actually talking joy in our relationships. Do we talk about joy in our relationships? Do we talk about happiness? Sometimes in relationships, you know, we're A, just focusing on what we're supposed to do at the moment or planning some activity or whatever it is we're doing, and whatever kind of relationship it is, we miss up those things. Sometimes, maybe, and this is good too, we at least have a relationship where we can talk about the difficult things, and that's really important. But do we talk about joy? Do we talk about happiness? Do we check in with each other about it? It's like, how happy are you feeling? You know, how much joy is there in your life right now? It can be a little weird or embarrassing or cheesy, right? But it's actually incredibly important. You know, are you feeling joy? Is there joy in your life? How can we help each other cultivate some joy together? How can we grow in our joy? It's really, really important. You know, we tend to sometimes, I think, for some reason, I know I have many times, you know, we like leave it aside. Sort of like it's not the most pressing issue at the moment. So I'm not going to deal and actually ask the question and talk about that. But it is the most pressing issue of the moment. You know, it's actually the foundational issue. It's the issue which, when we work on it, provides this kind of incredible base on which everything else can grow and flourish. Just like, you know, Cicero talked about gratitude. It's like I told you, I sent this list of sort of, you know, Jewish meditation jokes, one of which says, accept misfortune as a blessing. Do not wish for perfect health or a life without problems. What would you talk about? It's like we have that fear sometimes sort of subtly. It's like, well, without the hard stuff, What would we do? Life would be boring. What would we talk about? Don't worry about it. Right? It's like, don't worry about it. We could just actually talk about the good stuff. There's so much exploration to do. There's so much opening up to do about our own just searching and opening to joy and playfulness and lightness and right and literature and pleasure and music and dance and whatever those things are that are just bringing joy and lightness to your life. Not as a means of escape, right? Not as a running away, but as just a genuinely opening to the wondrousness of this human life. Right? It's just precious. It's amazing we have this human life. And we can do all these amazing, wonderful, incredible things. And we want to open to that appreciation and joy of each one of those moments. And so can we just ask ourselves and each other, how can we be happier with our families, with our friends, with our communities? Just ask the question, sort of see what comes up for you and for other people. How can we be happier? How can we feel loved more? How can we support each other more? And this playfulness and lightness can really help you in every dimension. I was on one retreat, and one of my fellow retreatants, which is amazing, we were all like, good for you, said she was experiencing tremendous aversion. You know, there's like a lot of immersion room. And she felt like she had moved to this place where she could just sort of have fun with aversion. Like she was experimenting with it, she was curious with it, she was being a little playful with it. It was still there, it was still happening, but instead of being stuck in it or even feeling like so heavy with it, like, oh my God, it's aversion, I have to open to it, how am I going to work with it? It was this much lighter kind of playful thing of, oh wow, look at my crazy mind operating. That's really interesting. That's such a wonderful attitude. Can we even be playful and open with our own pain, your own aversion? It's very useful sometimes to just realize we don't have to take it so seriously, right? It's so serious, and it's no big deal. You know, it's both of those things at the same time. It's like the most important thing in your life, and it's totally no big deal. It's just another moment of life. It's all fine. The same list I was sent me also. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Forget this. And attaining enlightenment will be the least of your problems. As I have trouble breathing in and out. But it's like, right, we're so focused, and it's important. We want to have the focus. We want to have the effort. And, wow, just be a little lightened about it and let it go. It's like, lost in fantasy for 5 minutes. That's pretty funny. You know, just like the craziness of my mind operating. It's like, notice that 20 times already, still getting stuck on it. Wow, that's pretty funny, right? Like, isn't my mind totally crazy the way it works? The way that, even like, I know I should, but no, not doing it. Okay, right? It's like that own playfulness, which is actually a mode of sort of self-acceptance and opening, is really powerful. It can let you be with things in totally different ways. I know for me, laughing at my own mind is incredibly important practice, incredibly important, with a lot of love. But just laughing at your own mind, right? Our minds are totally crazy. We're totally crazy. And it's okay. It's great to just appreciate that and recognize also that it's true of every single human out there, right? Often we think, like, my mind's so crazy. Just my mind's so crazy. But let me tell you. You've all noticed already that your minds are crazy. And if you talk to each other, you'll notice that your minds are crazy. And if you do, you know, certainly my experience of like doing meditation interviews with other people, very clear. It's true of all of our minds. All of our minds are doing it. And so just some joy. It's like that Hafiz poem I mentioned on the retreat. God and I have become like two giant fat people living in a tiny boat. We keep bumping into each other and laughing. Yeah, lovely. Yeah, just lovely. Right? We're two giant fat people in a tiny boat, and we keep just bumping into each other and laughing. And that's really the nature of our life. We're like constantly bumping into God. And we want to be laughing about it. The goal is just to be laughing about it. The joy of just bumping into God all the time. Our bellies are just like smacking into each other. Right? That's pretty funny. lies. Okay. So I think I'm going to pause there. I'm going to pause there and open us up for some questions. And what I'd like to continue talking about, as you can see, we're going to continue talking about joy next time. I want to talk about next time are two things. I'll just preview it, which is passion, the place of passion, you know, and desire and sort of our passion involved with things, for the place in our life of joy. And I want to return to a little bit we talked about the place of joy in our sense of self. So we'll continue with those next time. As normal, it's open time for questions, thoughts, etc.
Yeah.
Sure. Not a bad idea.
That wasn't my question, but I was doing a gratitude practice very strongly last year before I came to the first retreat. It was very powerful.
Mm.
The retreat then raised some questions for me. For example, when I was talking to Joanna about something that had come into my life that was unpleasant, and I said to her that my way of dealing with it was to be grateful for it, she said, that made her a bit uncomfortable. She said, no, just accept it. And there seems to be a bit of a tension between the gratitude practice and the meditation practice, which seems to be more about welcoming and accepting. We don't, as soon as something arises, go, oh, yippee, hooray, thank you. We just notice it, we wait with it, we accept it. So it seems as if, and then on the other hand, like so on that level, it seems as if the gratitude practice is different and maybe can achieve sometimes more powerful things than the meditation practice. But then on the other hand, gratitude also sometimes covers up the pain too well. In other words, something awful's happened, and you immediately say to yourself, I should be grateful because you've developed a gratitude practice. You rush to that. And then there, the meditation practice is much more superior because you really need to sit with that pain and not rush over to that self. How do they interact, I guess?
Great. That's a great question. So first of all, first thing you said is absolutely right, which is that they're just different. They're not the same practice, right? One is mindfulness and opening awareness. And the other one, which is pragmatism, is how do we use particular qualities to cultivate certain states, which are beneficial states and actually support our mindfulness. So for instance, when gratitude and joy are present, it's much easier to be mindful because there's a place of kind of strength and stability which allows us to accept whatever arises. So that's one piece. But the other piece is, and this is really important, when I mentioned working on the gratitude practice, the way I said it, and I think this is very important, is to notice a few things that you are grateful for. Not to convince yourself or make yourself grateful for things that you aren't grateful for, which is a totally different thing and a different kind of practice, right? Notice things that you are grateful for and just notice that and appreciate that, which I feel is no tension at all with mindfulness. That's actually noticing a truth that's already present in yourself. That's a very different thing from saying, when anything comes up, I have to be grateful for it. Now, that isn't also necessarily bad either, and I'll talk about that in a second, but I think it's definitely unwise as the first response. It's not a good first response. The first response should be, I think, can I open to it and be totally present with it? Because otherwise, it's just a mode of repression and aversion, right? So I want to tell myself, oh, I'm grateful for it. I'm like, no, I'm not. This sucks. Right? You're not grateful for it. This really hurts. And you don't have to be grateful for it. So it's fine. Not just fine. I think it's healthiest and best to first genuinely open to it and to the experience you are actually having. Once you do that, there may be ways to work with gratitude around it. So for instance, I mean, one important way, once you open to it, is reframing it. So we may be upset about something because we're seeing it in a certain way. One of the things we learn as we watch our mind is that our mind lies, right? So we've created a certain story around it. When we're willing to touch the experience which underneath, which may be sadness or fear or something, so we can touch and open to that experience, we can notice the story that's playing out around that experience. And then we may say something like, well, that's not true, right? That's not true. Maybe the simplest level of, that person is being really mean and ignoring me and never wants to make contact with me or something, and really you realize they just didn't see you because they were reading a book, right? I don't know, right? Totally, like, we've been triggered, we're having some response about it. It can happen whatever response it happens to with you. And all of a sudden you can see that the story you're making up is not a true story. And you can change that story, and your attitude towards that event changes. And that's great. As long as you're not doing that from a place of, I shouldn't be feeling this. And that's exactly the key. And that's why it's not gratitude, at least when I don't work with God, I don't grab gratitude as like, I'm feeling bad about this, I should be feeling this about this, this about it. As soon as the should comes in, I'm very suspicious and I feel uncomfortable. But just noticing the things I am already grateful about, that's great. And noticing my genuine experience, and then maybe noticing the way that I'm creating that experience because my mind is telling a certain story and I don't need to believe that story. And this is actually, you know, I'm feeling terrible with the situation. Actually, I might realize, oh, actually, the situation's okay. Great. Wonderful. Skillful. Beneficial. Without the should part. So we all use escapism. It's a pretty standard human pattern. Something difficult arises, and because we don't want to deal with that difficulty in some way, we seek out something else which allows us to in some way be distracted from our difficulty. Classic examples are TV, books, movies, drugs, alcohol, sex, right? Those are classic examples of ways we escape. And there may be totally other ways we escape as well, right? Each of our particular ways of escaping. Fantasizing is generally a way of escaping. You can notice that if you notice your practice. Fantasizing, even when you're fantasizing about something unpleasant, there's something pleasant about and sticky about the fantasizing itself. There's something kind of comforting. One of my teachers talked about it as thumb-sucking, right? It's kind of like thumb-sucking. It's like just your mind being caught in fantasy. There's something vaguely comforting about it, even when it's disturbing fantasy. And of course, it can be even more subtle than that. So your body can escape to all kinds of places in your mind. The repression can escape to all kinds of places. Your mind pushes to certain places because of the other places that are too dangerous or uncomfortable to see. So let's say a few things about it. The first thing is that you can notice you're escaping when you actually try to notice the experience of what you're doing now. So for instance, if you're eating, and you notice there's something addictive about the quality of what you're doing. You know, there's something grasping about that quality. If you notice that, if you investigate, you notice there's some discomfort in you. There's some pain in you. And you're trying to pursuing these other things. And that thing is sort of masking or taking you away from the pain. Right? So that's valuable. You can see that. And then you can choose to just pause in the activity of escape for a moment and start to touch in to the place of pain. Start to touch into that place of pain. Having said that, I'll say, I'm going to put this out, that bigadol, escapism, is not the choice, but bikatan, in a particular situation, sometimes escapism is actually valuable. So I've had times, for instance, when I'm trying to work with some quality or something psychologically, and I'm working with it, and then it gets out of control. It's too overwhelming, and for whatever reasons, at that moment, I don't have the resources to stay with it. I don't have the resources to sit with it. And there are various things I can do. Sometimes it means I need to shift my practice, so I go write about it instead of meditating with it, and that helps work it out in a certain way, and I can come back. And sometimes there's been times where it's like, it's too much, and like I go watch something, and actually just that experience of kind of zoning out and having a little bit of light, meaningless fun for a minute gives me back a little bit of stability in a place where I can open to it again. So that's my experience in it. So it's not that escapism is always terrible. And actually, nothing terrible with doing all these things, right? It's just trying to notice if I'm using it as a means of escape, it's not going to solve the problem. And so we just want to notice that we're doing it as a means of doing something else. You know, we want comfort, we eat, for instance, the classic example. Well, the eating is not going to actually give us comfort, right? It might make us feel a little bit better in the moment, but it's not actually going to solve the problem that we're actually trying to have. Nothing wrong with eating, but just be helpful for us to figure out, what I really want is comfort. How can then I work on developing a sense of okayness or enoughness or comfort or whatever it is I really need from that experience, rather than doing it for eating, which isn't going to be healthy for me, and yada, yada, yada. I'll say one other thing about escapism, just because it's something that's been on my mind lately, which is, in my own experience, and I'm just thinking about this now more lately, there's a way we can use media and literature, any sort of means of sort of any kind of artistic production, as a way of escaping or a way of going deeper. You know? And just to notice that. I'm trying to notice that just sort of more in my life. You decide you're going to go out for a movie. And it's not right or wrong. Like, it's okay to just go see a fluffy, whatever, fun movie. Sometimes. It's not about condemning it, but just noticing, like, what are my choices and why am I making those choices? Or I don't want to see something that's going to open my heart. It's going to make me cry. It's going to open me to something larger. Right? Not right or wrong. It's just noticing, actually, the choices we're making. If we're consistently making one choice, if we're consistently going to things that are escapist, that's just a good clue for us to notice, oh, that's interesting. What am I escaping from? You know, what is it that I'm trying to escape from? What is it that's feeling difficult to me that I'm seeking some kind of refuge from? And these things, unfortunately, are always a temporary refuge versus a more permanent refuge, which is the willingness to be with and deal with that difficulty itself.
So, a moment ago, you were talking about when you go to a place and it's feeling too much and so you want to escape. Every time you bring things like that up, I've always made me question my practice. Because I've talked to you about this before, but after the retreat, I felt like I was ready to take it to the next level. That up to then, I was just noticing my breath.
Right.
And I still feel like I'm still at that place, just enough just to notice my breath and to go to the kind of places that you always refer to. Like, maybe once happened. So I just keep questioning my practice.
First of all, noticing your breath is great practice. And you can go the whole way just noticing your breath. You can go the whole way. You'll do it in a slightly different way. It'll be more kind of a clarification and purification practice than sort of a working with the emotions just as they come up. So first of all, you shouldn't feel like, oh, if you're going with the breath and you're getting more concentrated and you're being present with it, that can be great. Having said that, there's a tendency we can do to be with our breath is to move from mindfulness into concentration, right? And so we're just very focused on our breath. And that's fine, concentration practice is beneficial, but it's not actually the core practice we're trying to work with. Because what concentration does is it focuses us, it brings us some joy and bliss, which are all great, positive, valuable things. But it does not train us in working with the actual stuff of life and in healing our reactions of aversion and ignorance and grasping to the stuff of life. And so if we notice that we're with breath for a while and we're doing pretty well with breath, what we want to do is open up the range of perception. We want to open up the range of perception. And we can do that a number of ways. One of the things that we did on the retreat is noticing the most prominent body sensation, right? Instead of working with the breath, you just sit down and your intention now is I'm just going to notice what's most prominently arising. And that itself can be a good way to start working with emotion because often when you start to notice sensations in the body, you'll notice ones connected to emotions. Another thing to do is to start to work directly with emotional states, which is really valuable. And so what you want to do is you sit, and you just open your awareness to your emotional state at the moment. Like, what's happening right now? Am I joyous? Am I sad? Am I anxious? Am I mind states as well? It could be curiosity. Any kind of mental, emotional state that's happening inside of you. You just try to observe it, and then you watch it. Just like you watch your breath, you watch a bodily sensation. And they'll be present, and they'll pass. And then something else will come up. And then maybe something will come up which is a little stronger. And then you start to just observe it, and welcome it in, and observe it, and welcome it in. As you notice emotion, usually what you want to do is first anchor it in the body. So some emotion comes up. How am I experiencing that emotion in my body? The key places we normally want to check out first are our chest, our tummy and our back, just because for most humans, that's where we tend to feel our emotions most prominently. So you have some emotion come up, you start to notice, where's that sensation in my body? Okay, there's anxiety happening. Okay, I can feel a kind of tightness and movement in my chest. Great. And now I just want to open to it, observe, and invite in. So it's always observing with that invitation in. It's like, okay, tightness in my chest. Welcome to stay. I'm just going to watch you. Welcome to stay. Welcome to stay. One more piece of that, which I'm going to add. Yeah, first of all, that's already huge, right? You can do like tremendous practice doing that. Tremendous practice. Sometimes people feel like there are things coming up, but they sort of flit away, and they can't be with them, and they're not really noticing anything or any kind of strong emotion or anything really being present. And sometimes that can just be because nothing's strongly present at the moment, and that's fine. Sometimes it can be because actually that's another mode of avoidance. You know, we're not allowing ourselves to see what's happening deep underneath. So what can be interesting there is to just notice it, right? So some kind of like the first poke of an emotion comes out. It's not fully flourished or whatever, but a poke comes out, notice it, observe it, and then just ask what's underneath. Just ask yourself the question. You don't have to give any particular answer. It's just an invitation for if there's something underneath for it to come forward. You can just say what's underneath. And you can even say to yourself something like, what's underneath? I'm sort of lovingly available to it. You know, like I'm here, I'm the container, I can hold it. What's underneath? And allow it to come. The last way you might want to work with that, which is also very effective, is next time a strong emotion comes up, start sitting with it. Like don't wait for the time to practice. It's like, oh, strong emotion is arising. Whatever it is, at some point of your life, if you can take 5 minutes then, go take 5 minutes right then and start to sit with that emotion. Because also it's helpful because it gives you something very concrete and present to work with. It's already there. It's present. And then you can start to understand how to work with it in the practice and open up to it more and more. Okay. Give this up. So I just want to say thank you again, everybody, for coming. The class is by donation. Please give generously. We will not be meeting next week. Or maybe we will meet next week. You and Siobhan want to have a sit next week?
Sure.
Next time? Okay. We will be meeting next week. I won't be here. But we will be meeting next week. And I will see everybody in 2 weeks. Great.
See you after.